So now begin the talk on some aspect of the Buddha's teachings, and the traditional way of beginning is by reflecting on the Buddha and his enlightenment by doing the traditional Pali verses. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namasami. It gives me great pleasure to come back to Western Australia, and particularly to come back to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, to this centre here, after being away for over a year, and to have a chance to come and visit you all again, and especially to see so many old friends and companions on the path to freedom, and also to meet so many new friends, and hopefully we can walk on that path some distance of the way together. And I would like to just express my appreciation to all of you for your good practice and what you are doing here, because it is something very rare and noble in the world, just to find people who are aspiring to freedom, aspiring to happiness, aspiring to goodness that is unique, and especially working on themselves or working on yourselves to achieve those goals, those aims. And this evening I wanted to say something about the path in life, and the path that we tread in this religious journey. The reason I want to talk about paths is because I've become very conscious about paths and walkways, and I've become very conscious about steps and the bumps and slippery paths since I have injured my foot, it is interesting when you do have an injury that it does make you more conscious of the subtleties of walking, and the things that we take for granted when we don't have them, they become very important, and we notice their significance to us when they're not there. And that's very true for many things in our lives, isn't it? We take those loved ones around us often for granted. It's only when they're not there that we really miss them and we really know their significance and importance to our lives. We take happiness for granted, wealth for granted, health for granted, youth for granted. But when it is not there, then we do know that this was very significant, this was important. And I've had a number of opportunities to reflect on this aspect of the path. What is a path? And just to get it over and done with, to tell you how I broke my foot, because I have to repeat it many times. I have been contemplating putting a little tape recorder beside me, and whenever anyone asks, I just press the button and it is a pre-recorded message. But it was, I have moved to a monastery in the northeast of Thailand called the International Forest Monastery, Wat Pa Nanachat. And last year in the rainy season we were subject to quite a bit of flooding. And we have a wall around the monastery, but there was a fundamental design fault that they didn't put any outlets in the wall. And so when it rained very heavily, which it did last year, the rain became a swimming pool in our monastery. And we then decided after the rains to make some canals. And I had an excavator brought in, and we were excavating on the far end of the back of the monastery, and it's quite a large property, and it's about a kilometer from the front gate to the back of the monastery. And I went late in the evening to have a look at the excavator and doing the work on the outside of the wall of the monastery. And then I thought, I will take a shortcut back to the main hall. It has been 6 months since I began my shortcut. And I decided to jump the wall of the monastery, which in my younger days I'd done a number of times. I climbed up on the wall of the monastery to take the shortcut and landed on a rock in the grass, which I didn't see, and then fractured my heel and injured the foot, badly rolled it. And it was when I landed on the rock in the grass that I realized I was closer to 50 than 21. And it's taken a number of years to realize that, but it suddenly dawned on me. And I realized also that there's a thing called heedlessness when we decide to take shortcuts. It sometimes ends up not being a shortcut, but a long way around. And it's a long road to recovery sometimes from these so-called shortcuts in life that we sometimes take. And one of the first things that occurred to me was that, yes, this action seemed like the easy way. Easy way, jump over the wall, go back to the hole. That will be a shortcut. That will reduce my time. I was very much in a hurry, very busy monk. Some of the monks have made many jokes about this, even the abbot of your monastery here. I have swallowed my pride, and my only saving grace in this whole exercise was that I was jumping back into the monastery, not out of it. And I could at least comment about that to the junior monks and say that my one saving grace was that I was jumping back in. The other saving grace was it was in the daytime, not in the middle of the night, and I couldn't be accused of any inappropriate behavior. It was in the daytime, and there was witnesses to my event. I have been told by many people that there is a very expensive dish which is available even in the casino here in Perth, I was told recently. It's also available in Thailand and in China, and it's called the monk that jumped over the wall because it's supposed to give you so much energy that you want to jump over the wall. Even monks want to jump over the wall. I wouldn't advise that dish if I was you. It's... one of the things that I did see, though, was as when the injury became obvious that it was serious, just the immense amount of kindness my foot has received in the last 6 months. And just from all the monks, I got 24-hour nursing care with a lot of love, a lot of attention, a lot of appreciation. And also one of the things that made me very aware was that I had to stop. And sometimes in our path in life, just being forced to stop is very useful. The monks in my monastery loved me having an injured foot because I was bedridden, and that means I couldn't escape from them. So they could come and ask all their questions about profound states of Dhamma, and I couldn't get away from them. I couldn't find an excuse to not respond. And so that was another aspect, was that being injured was allowed me to be close to the people around me, just allow them to take care of me. And that's actually a very, very nice thing, to be not only because you want to be not because you want to be taken care of, but because it was necessary. And the thing that it made very obvious was that we cannot be proud in life because we're totally dependent on each other. And we think sometimes that we can just go our own way in life. We can take our own course, our own path in life, and forget everybody else. I don't care, I'll do my own thing. But we can't. There are times when we're absolutely dependent on the beings around us and the kindness and the care that they will give, and especially when one is sick and ill. And so it gave me a chance to reflect just on the path. And the path in Buddhism is a pathway which is called the middle path. It is not going to extremes. It is a pathway which goes between two extremes. And what are the extremes? It is the extreme of just seeking out for pleasure for oneself and likes and happiness and gratification for oneself. That is one extreme, because that extreme has consequences. The extreme of just seeking pleasure for me, for mine, for myself, regardless of how it affects others, then there is an effect regardless of how one considers what one does. It has consequences. And this word consequences is a very important word to remember, because it is the basis of ethics. The reason we take up an ethical or moral a virtuous form of behavior is because that ethical form of behavior has skillful, beneficial consequences as of a result of acting in that way or speaking in that way. And the opposite is true. Behavior which is unskillful, unethical, unvirtuous, immoral, not good, also has consequences. And I think that everyone here tonight is very aware that we have acted in the past unskillfully in our lives, and we don't dwell on that. But the wisdom that has arisen out of seeing the consequences of that unskillful behavior, those unskillful deeds or unskillful words that we've said, and the effect that it's had on not only ourselves but others, we've seen that and we've turned away from that, realized, I don't want to go in that direction anymore. I don't want to repeat those same mistakes. I need to change. I need to develop skillful behaviors, because the consequences are beneficial to myself and others. And so considering consequences of what one does and what one is going to say is extremely important. It's the effect, and all these things do have effects. We know from, our own experience, when someone has said something which has been hurtful, sometimes the effect of that has lasted for a long, long time and had a great impact. And so too, when we speak in a, say, unkind or unskillful way, then the consequences of that can have a great effect, even to the point it can create conflict and wars. And we know the saying, the sword is the pen is mightier than the sword, because there is consequences of how we behave and speak. And so this is the basis of ethics, to consider the consequences of things. And so sometimes when we talk about ethics or morality, people think that it's someone outside us is laying down rules for us. It is not that. It is just considering, what's the consequence if I do this? What's the effect? And reflecting wisely on the outcomes, and then choosing, making a wise and skillful choice of what are the best outcomes. And sometimes we can choose outcomes which are best for us. and we don't care how it affects others. But we know that that leads to selfishness. And that again has consequences. It alienates ourselves from others and doesn't lead to harmony and doesn't lead to kindness and can lead to exploitation. But there is forms of behavior which is beneficial to ourselves and beneficial to others as well. So it has good consequences psychologically to ourselves. It makes us feel good, makes us happy, and it has good consequences and good effects on others. It makes them happy, makes them at ease, leads to kindness and inner harmony in a community and in a society, in a family, in a group, in the world. And so this is what we call ethics. It's considering the consequences of things. And this is a very important aspect of the path. Is the path is knowing what, where to, the direction to go, but also what's the results, what's the outcome, what direction does that path take us in. And so many of the pathways that we've begun in life, we have to reassess in the process of walking that path. Is this direction that I'm taking in life the direction I want to go, or do I want to change it? And if I continue in this direction, what's the outcome? What's the consequences for me? What's the effect for me? And people who are on a spiritual journey are looking for the best outcomes, the highest outcomes. They're seeking outcomes which are based in truth, which will lead them to truth, which will lead them to freedom, lead them to release and lead them to happiness, a happiness which is unchanging. And so that is the goal, that is the aspiration. So we have to look at the effects of our behavior and speech and see whether it inclines in that direction and fulfills the goals and aspirations that we seek for. And when we begin on the path seeking out that those higher aspirations, then we have to avoid the extremes. And in my monastery, there is a saying that is written down on a signboard and nailed to one of the trees, and it is a saying of one of Ajahn Chah's teachings, my meditation teacher, and it says that if you are still following your likes and dislikes, you're not practicing the Buddha's path. Just think about that one. If you're still following your likes and dislikes, you're not on the Buddha's path. So we're talking about the path, and the pathway is in between those two, in between liking things and in between disliking things. Because our likes and dislikes are very conditioned, and our likes and dislikes constantly change. Sometimes we like something in the morning and dislike it in the evening. We like it when it's warm in the morning and dislike it when it's cold in the evening or warm in the evening. We find that our likes and dislikes are uncertain as well. They're not only constantly changing, but they depend on our moods. And they depend on our conditioning very much. There is a middle path between dislike and like, between delight and pleasure and aversion and frustration. And that is the middle path. That is the way of wisdom. For example, do we dislike illness? The general state of a human mind is, the general condition is, yes, we dislike illness. So when illness comes to us, we're going to be unhappy. We're going to suffer. But actually, there is a pathway which says that we can be at peace, even with illness. So when the road gets rough, we can still be at peace with that rough road. We can be at peace with an injured leg. We can be at peace with cancer. We can be at peace with a headache. We can be at peace when dying, because we're not caught up in aversion to that process. There is just knowing. Oh, this is just feeling. This is just pain. We're not going to rejection of it, resistance to it, trying to build a wall against it, trying to go to war against painful feeling. And the same is true for the opposite, when pleasant feelings arise. There is this great grasping to pleasure, great grasping to seek happiness, to the point where we're always running after some illusionary state of happiness. And we cannot be content because we're trying to seek something, often which is a fantasy, isn't it? Just like sitting here, if you're trying to seek absolute comfort while sitting on the floor, will you find it? And if you try to seek absolute comfort even while sitting in a chair, will you find it? You sometimes find it for a short period of time. Then it changes. It gets uncomfortable. And that discomfort causes displeasure. So if we're trying to seek this quality of comfort, happiness, pleasure, and running after it, then we're missing the point. That's not the way of the Buddhas. The way of the Buddhas is to not reject things and not run after things, but to know things, to know what is happening. So even if it's the most unpleasant pain, you can be aloof from that pain and know it, and be at peace in that knowing. And in that peace, there can be a great sense of equanimity. And this is the middle way between the two extremes. In our life, we often are taking these shortcuts in life. I've been giving lots of talks about taking shortcuts. I really do see that the tendency is to want to hurry things along, isn't it? Many of you have been meditating here for many years. And sometimes we get frustrated. We want to hurry it along. We want to speed it up. This craving, this desire to get results. Been practicing all this time. Why aren't I enlightened? Been practicing all this time. I don't think I've got anywhere. Why hasn't something happened? And that is this wanting to speed things up. We're walking along the path and we want to get there quickly. So we often look for shortcuts. And this looking for shortcuts is often what takes us the long way around. The middle way is the shortcut. The middle way between the extremes of like and dislike is a shortcut. So if you establish in your mind at this moment equanimity to pleasure and pain, equanimity to like and dislike, then you're taking the shortcut, the direct route to enlightenment. That is the middle way, the straight way, the direct way. Any other way is a long way round. It won't get you there quickly. If you want to get there quickly, then stay in the middle. Staying in the middle means to be balanced, to be very poised, to be stable. And this is what we're looking for, isn't it? To be centered, to be balanced, to have stability in our lives, to have a sense of being centered and poised amongst the comings and goings, the distractions, the disturbances, the elations and frustrations of life. And developing an ability to be stable like a rock, to be stable like a mountain. And what is the quality that will make us stable like a rock, stable like a mountain? It's the quality of wisdom to know things change. So when pain arises, instead of reacting with dislike, we know this too will change. So whenever anyone asks me, how's your foot going? I say, it's getting better. I don't know whether it's getting better, but I know it'll change. So any state that changes from this is better than as it is at the moment. And when you have this ability to just know that this too will change, this pain will change, or even this pleasure will change, then that is the wisdom that makes you stable, makes you centered, makes you unshakable. That's what a description of the enlightened ones is. Their minds are unshakable, unperturbed. And a description of enlightenment is the unperturbable, the imperturbable, I think it's imperturbable. And that is a state where things aren't disturbed, aren't shaken, because they're stable. And cannot be shaken by anything. It's stable, the enlightened person's mind is stable because of the wisdom to know that this too will change. And so it's bearable. If you know something will change, then it becomes bearable. For example, sometimes we're in a marriage or relationship or something which has become painful. But if you know that this person that we're upset with at the moment will change, or the situation will change, then it becomes more bearable. And it is so too with any pain. If we know it will change, then that wisdom, that understanding, that insight allows us to be able to endure it further and for a longer time. And this is the wisdom that we need to cultivate and focus on all the situations in life, both the pleasant and the unpleasant. And that wisdom takes us back to the center, takes us back to the middle. It is the middle path between the extremes. It's the eye in the needle. The eye in the needle is empty. And when there's emptiness, things can pass through. If things are solid, then nothing can pass through. But that eye in the needle, then the thread can pass through in that space, that emptiness. And it's the emptiness of wisdom that knows that this too will change. This too is not me, is not mine. This too is to be let go of. This too is not held on to. And that's a very important thing to realize, that this is the path, this middle way of wisdom. Very often we're very frustrated, as I said, in our spiritual practice, we feel we're not getting anywhere. Ajahn Chah used to give an analogy of when we have a meal. When we have a meal and we eat the meal from the first bite to the last. When we get to the last bite and we feel full, then we assume, everyone assumes, it's this last bite of the meal, of the food, which fills us up. But actually, it's also the first bite of the meal that fills us up. And actually we're full from the very first bite. It is a process. We can't say which one of those bites is more important than the other. And so too, on the spiritual path, each step in the way is extremely important. Each step of awareness, each step of mindfulness, each time you try to do something kind, each time one endeavors to resist the temptations to lash out, speak out, hurt somebody else, when we develop the opposite of saying kind things and doing kind acts, when we make the mind peaceful, when we develop and reflect on things, All of that is a further step on the path which will make us more full. And the Buddha gave an analogy of which is like a person with a hoe. And when the person is digging with a hoe, if you use a hoe to dig the earth over and over again every day, the blade of the hoe gradually gets worn away by the friction as it impacts on the earth. And after many years, you'll find that you have to change the head of the hoe because it is worn away if you use it every day. But the gardener cannot say, today I have worn away so much of the metal of the head of the hoe, and tomorrow I'll wear away so much more. All he knows or she knows is that if they keep on digging the garden using a hoe, eventually the head of that hoe will be worn away. And so too, the practitioner on the spiritual path, if they keep on creating the causes of virtue, peace and wisdom, then they're gradually wearing away the unwholesome qualities of greed, hatred and delusion. But you cannot say, today I've worn away this much selfishness, or this much anger, or this much confusion. You just know that if I constantly do this, practice this process, then eventually you'll be worn away. And so we need to understand that the path is this gradual process. Our path in life cannot be full of shortcuts. It has to be a gradual, steady progression. Another little incident that happened when I was in Thailand was that we have a Russian monk, and one day his mother came to visit. She lives in Siberia, and it was her first trip outside of Russia. And she came to visit Ajahn Chah's monastery in Wat Bopong. And her son, who reads and writes Thai, took her over to the Ajahn Chah's monastery and was showing her around. And as she was walking around, she noticed there's many signs placed around the monastery, which are just reminders of people of various teachings of the Buddha or sayings that Ajahn Chah said. They're posted on the monastery. And as she was wandering around, she asked what the signs said, and her son translated them from Thai into Russian. And she was quite taken back by some of these sayings. For example, one that really struck her was that something that Ajahn Chah said is, if you let go a little, you have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you have complete peace. And she was very taken back, so much so that she took out a notebook out of her backpack and started writing these sayings down in Russian so that she could take them back home. And as she was coming out the front gate of the monastery, she pointed to a sign low down and asked her son, what does that say? And he chuckled because it was actually a warning sign which said, careful, slippery road. Because the path in the monastery in the rainy season gets quite mouldy and therefore very slippery. And so the monks had written a sign just to warn people, careful, slippery road. And so her son, the monk, laughed at his mother and said, it's just a sign to say, careful, slippery road. And she quickly pulled out a notebook and wrote it down in Russian. And then she turned and wagged a finger at her son and said, that's not just a warning sign about to stop people falling over in the monastery. It's to remind them that it's very easy when you're in a monastery sometimes to be aware, to be mindful. But it's when you walk out the front gate of the monastery, then that road is often very slippery, and it's easy to fall over, and it's easy to forget oneself, and it's easy to be heedless. And he came back and told me that story, and I said, your mother's wiser than you are. And I've been intending to put a similar sign at the front gate of my monastery, just to remind people that when you leave the monastery door, the monastery gate, careful, slippery road. And it is, isn't it? It's when we come here, or when I've heard many people say that when they come up and spend some time at the monastery here in Serpentine, it's so easy to meditate, it's so easy to make the mind peaceful. But then when they go home, or when they're in the car and get caught in the traffic, someone cuts in front of them, then suddenly the road has become very slippery and we forget. And so that's when we have to be very cautious. We have to be careful of the slippery path. And when we're on a slippery path, then we have to put a lot of awareness and mindfulness not to allow it to slip. Not to allow the mind to slide. And we have to be very careful. Because we often are caught up with the idea that the spiritual path will be even. Will be smooth. It should go extremely well. Everything should go right. Because we're trying to do something good. Don't we? We think, how can it possibly go wrong? Why does it go wrong? It shouldn't go wrong. And life isn't like that. The path, the direction, even our spiritual direction, our spiritual aspirations, will have challenges placed there on the road. We will have difficulties, problems that will test us out. And that's very, very good. And because it tests our wisdom out. The life's path is not all smooth. The spiritual path is not all smooth. And if you don't accept the difficulties, then you're missing the point. That's the challenge. It's not guaranteed to be smooth and easy. And those challenges are very useful. One of the best pieces of advice that I got when I was going to take up the role of being abbot of this international monastery, which is a very big monastery and has a lot of duties and a lot of administration, was that one of my monastic friends, who's an abbot, told me very wisely, just remember that the best metal is a form of metal which is heated up till it is bright red, and then it's taken out and it's hammered over and over again. Then it's put back into the fire and heated up again. Then it's taken out and it's hammered. And that hardens the steel. And so too, in taking up any responsibilities in life, if we just want it to have no problems, then we're going to be very disappointed. But if we're quite willing to be put into the fire, heated up, and hammered, then that's where we grow, that's where we become wiser. So it's, you know, when you have challenges in your relationships, in your work, financially, with your health, whatever, those challenges, you're being put in the fire and hammered. It's okay, it'll make you stronger. If you look at it that way, then it becomes, rather than a great burden, a great problem, why me? It becomes great, a chance for wisdom. I won't be overcome by this problem. I will try to be able to use this situation to grow more wise and more skillful. And you can learn a lot from those very difficult situations. Because we find that when things are coasting along, it's often not the times when we grow, when we develop wisdom. It's when we're challenged. We have to find ways to solve those problems, overcome them, work out why we're stuck on that issue, why we're looking at it in a particular way. when we're challenged, that leads often to growth, special spiritual growth. And so when we're challenged in this way, if we have the right attitude towards it, then it can be the way that makes us very strong as a person. It doesn't mean that we're always going to be peaceful. The Buddhist path is not a guarantee that you'll always be peaceful. And it's not even that we're trying to always be peaceful. What we're trying to do is be still in the midst of challenges. There are times when one has to be developing the mind to absolute stillness so that one develops clarity. There are times when you have to solve the problem. And at that time, it's, can you be still? Can you be content when everything's going wrong? Can you be still? Can you be content when it's all falling apart? When there's many problems, when there's many difficulties. This is when we're in the fire, being heated up, when we're being hammered. Can we be still when we're being criticized or blamed? Can we be still when we're being having accusations against us, or when we're not getting what we want, or we've lost what we find dear and pleasing? These are the tests, and this is where wisdom needs to be brought to the fore. And so we can take these as ways of challenging our patience, challenging our endurance, that I will persevere, I will strive on, it will change. That knowledge that it will change is the wisdom which takes us out of the fire. When you're in the fire of the challenges of life, and the path is not smooth, when everything seems to be going wrong, you know it will change. And that's okay. And when you're taken out of the fire and you are struck by the pains of life, the criticisms, the negativity, the faults, the failures, one has the courage, the endurance, the patience and the perseverance to know it will change. And so that makes you very strong. And this is a very important aspect of the Buddhist teachings, to know it will change, to not expect everything to go well. I remember one monk who had injured a cartilage in his knees and he couldn't sit cross-legged. And he was feeling a bit despondent about that because he couldn't take part in many of the duties of the that many of the other members of the community were doing. And because of that, he was thinking, well, you know, monks have to sit cross-legged. You know, if you don't sit cross-legged in full lotus, you're just not doing the role of a monk. And he went to Ajahn Chah and started complaining and saying to Ajahn Chah, you know, it's not meant to be like this. My leg should be fine. I should get over this. And Ajahn Chah said to him, if it wasn't meant to be like this, it wouldn't be like this. And then it was like a big burden had been taken off his shoulder. Oh, it was meant to be like this. And how often in our lives do we say that? It's not meant to be like this. They shouldn't be like this. I shouldn't be like this. Life shouldn't be like this. This situation shouldn't be like this. If it wasn't meant to be like this, it wouldn't be like this. It's just the way things are. And so when we see that this is the way it is, it's meant to be like this, then we can be at peace. It's not that we don't try and change injustices, try to improve ourselves, but we deal with the situation as it is with knowledge. It is like this at this point in time. What are we going to do about it? And that's when we have the choice. We consider the consequences of the path, the consequences of how we're going to react, how we're going to deal with this situation. The other very good piece of advice that I got, which I'll pass on to you this evening, was from Thanachan Pliyan. Thanachan Pliyan has visited here before, and he gave me some good advice when I took over from at the Wat Nanachat. He said that if you have many problems in your leadership role, being the abbot of Wat Nanachat, he said, very good, because it'll make you reflect, I don't want to be born again. And so when it gets completely overburdensome and you think it really shouldn't be like this, then you think, very good, it's like this, I don't want to be born again. Yes, and it makes one reflect that this is the world. And often we get very upset. We think the world should be otherwise, that there shouldn't be any wars, there should be ultimate peace. That's true, that's an ideal. But how has the world been? The world has been in this constant state of change, constant state of flux, constant state of turmoil. History shows us that it always has been like this. It always will be like this. The reason it always will be like this is not because of anything else, but because of greed, hatred, and delusion. And if these qualities have not taken out of our own hearts, then the world will carry on like this. We have a responsibility, if we want peace and harmony in the world, to do something about it. We do something about it by changing ourselves first. And this is the other thing that we take up on the path, is to change ourselves, to change our direction. How can I change my direction in life so that I become a more skillful, more peaceful person? That I learn to work in harmony with those around us and those I live with, rather than working in conflict. Because sometimes we don't use the mind and the directions of the mind to go in harmony with things. We tend to go against things. We need to also learn how to harmonize with the people around us. And when we live in harmony with the people around us, then that brings up a great deal of peace. And sometimes that living in harmony means to put aside what one wants to do and do what others want to do, if what they want to do is beneficial and skillful. And sometimes the problems, the arguments that we have, the disappointments and disagreements we have, are sometimes quite minor in the long run. And the most important thing is harmony. Harmony leads to peace. And you see that in this room just this moment. People are just abiding in harmony. Because we are aware and respectful of other people. We're caring to ourselves and caring to others. And this brings about a sense of harmony here. So these pathways in life should be reflected on. Firstly, what is the path that we take in our life? And to realize that each path has consequences. Each direction, each decision that we make and do has an effect, has a consequence. And if we have a consideration for the well-being of ourselves and others, then we'll develop consequences which are compassionate. And it is very important to realize that all virtue is based in compassion. Compassion for oneself, not wanting to see oneself suffer and not wanting to see any other being suffer. We see the consequences of inflicting pain and suffering, and we wouldn't like that to be us, and therefore we don't do it to others. We put ourselves in their position and we understand from their position how we would feel if we were unlike them, and therefore we try to do something about it. And so virtue is just a growth that grows out of a heart of compassion. That is why someone who is lacking in compassion finds it very easy to hurt others. Someone lacking in compassion finds it very easy to kill, to maim, to injure, to steal, to cause pain in their sexual relations, to lie, to injure themselves with abuse of drugs and intoxicants. And so when we have compassion, just being kind to oneself, we see we don't need that. It's not kind to hurt oneself. And so we overcome suffering and develop this compassionate heart. And therefore, it's a natural growth of virtue. Often we want to be more virtuous, but we sometimes don't know how. And it's not a way of saying, I shall not do that, and then hating ourselves when we make mistakes. The way to become more virtuous is to grow in compassion, to put yourself in the shoes of another. How would they feel if they are treated in this particular way? And that growth in compassion in the heart will naturally make us more virtuous, more caring, more kind. And this is the pathway to stillness and peace. And so when we understand that we take a pathway which is based in virtue, in peace, and in wisdom, then we're going this middle path, the middle path that the Buddha laid down between the two extremes of likes and dislikes, and doing what's right, doing what's appropriate, doing what's in the middle, not just seeking pleasure and gratification for oneself, or reacting through anger and aversion to what one doesn't like, but staying still in the middle to know that everything changes. This too will shift. This too will move. This too will get better. This too will deteriorate. It will all change. And that wisdom takes us on the path that leads to freedom. But knowing on that path to freedom, there will be hiccups. There will be bumps. There will be walls that you may choose to jump. And you have to deal with that. And then we know that these hiccups, these bumps, are to be expected and normal. But that can make us stronger if we develop them with a wise mind, a wise attitude. And that strength develops perseverance, endurance, these what we call barometers, these spiritual strengths, spiritual qualities, which take us closer and closer to the goal. So this evening I have talked about various aspects of the path, and I hope that your path is smooth, straight, quick and easy, and you obtain your goal that you aspire for. And that goal is freedom and liberation and peace.